Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 21, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah!
For March 5th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, aka Jack is back! I hit the sack! Da 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 da, it's gonna be back! that's courtesy of Zachary, I forgot to say, ACDC, courtesy of Zachary on Twitter and many other people, but I am thrilled to be once again with my co-host, Mr. Miles Bray.
And different strokes for different folks, and so on and so on, and Scooby-Dooby-Dooby. I am every gray people.
Thank you so much, because I love Sly Stone. So, Kellen Thompson, shout out to you for that, Sly, a.k.a.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very funny host of the Stuff You Should Know podcast with Chuck Bryant. We are joined by Josh Clark. Hey, Josh.
Yes.
I kind of bungled that. I made it sound like we were joined by Chuck, but
right.
We're joined by Josh.
Or that Stuff You Should Know is Stuff You Should Know featuring Chuck Bryant.
Yeah. So I blew that, but Josh.
But it is, in fact, Josh, right?
We're talking to Josh. And we're thrilled to be talking to him.
Man, you guys do your prep.
Yeah. Yeah, right? So, Josh, what is something you have searched in the not-too-distant past that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
The thing going through my internet history, the only thing it revealed is that I'm actually kind of boring. Mm. What I did find is all like work related, but luckily the work that I do makes my internet search history pretty weird. So I found an entry for Paregoric. Have you guys heard of that?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's opium for children that they used to give kids in the 19th century. And the reason I know about it is because Harriet Tubman used it to drug one of the kids that she was smuggling to freedom to keep it quiet along the journey.
Wow. That is something I'm going to have to try with my new, with my new son.
Wait, was it heroin or opiate? Well, it's the same thing. It's an opiate for children.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of tomato-tomato when you're giving it to kids.
What made it – like it was just a low dose or something that made it suitable for kids? Or not but like non-lethal.
There's a cute picture of a kid on the bottle too. That was it.
Right. So that made it suitable.
That baby H.
Heroin.
Right.
There's that picture on the internet that I don't think is doctored that is a bottle that says heroin on it and it's like being packaged as a children's like cough medicine or something.
Yeah, no. Heroin is it's a brand name from Bayer. The Bayer company originally created heroin. They did it as like a non-addictive alternative to morphine.
Right.
And then they said, oh, God, what have we done after that?
So people start stealing each other's gigantic bicycles and selling them.
Right.
That big wheel.
Right. Josh, what's something you think is underrated?
Oh, underrated Cadbury mini eggs.
Interesting. Wait, what? So what's in a mini egg?
So, okay, well, allow me to describe.
Please.
So the Cadbury mini egg is, it's got like this nice candy shell, but they chose like a nice matte pastel for the color scheme. So it's pleasing to look at.
Mm.
The size is about right. So you can just pop them in your mouth over and over and over again. And they've got a nice crunch. But then inside is some really good Cadbury chocolate.
That's right. Okay, yes.
So it's just like an M&M.
It's like an M&M, but
thicker, crunchier candy shell with a more pleasing color.
Right. If you want to dumb it down, you could say it's like an M&M.
All right.
I actually really like those because I have a weird M&M eating tactic where I like to let the candy shell melt in my mouth and then proceed to eat the chocolate. And with the Cadbury ones, the shell is so thick, it's a time investment.
Right.
And
yeah,
you have to stay disciplined if you like to eat your shit like that or your M&Ms like that.
I also, speaking of the matte finish, my favorite M&M color growing up was the light brown, which just seemed like the most delicious color for a chocolate candy to me.
Chocolate,
and then they did away with it.
They did?
So, yeah, they did.
When?
A long time ago, didn't they?
Oh, wow.
That's been gone for a while. And it's
still
not
like,
matte, but it's like a lightish color.
Right.
But is there a dark... The dark brown's still around?
Yeah, dark brown's still around, but they got rid of the sort of mocha colored M&M. And they never even had it for peanut M&Ms. It always bums
That's
me
so
out.
Sad.
It really sad. Okay, Josh, I mean, what's just, something that is overrated?
Well, on the other side of the coin, what I think is overrated are the Cadbury cream eggs.
Wow. Really?
I mean, everyone likes the Cadbury cream egg, right? Like, yeah. It's just part of Easter or whatever. Which, by the way, Easter now is like concurrent. It begins concurrently with Valentine's Day, which is a problem because if you like get into that Easter candy, you just keep going back and back over and over again.
Yeah.
And I think they probably planned this out.
Yeah.
But, so Cadbury cream eggs, it's like a part of Easter. But they also, the thing no one ever talks about, and I don't understand why we're not talking about this, is that they give you like horrible chemical burn too. Like they scorch your sinuses on the way down.
Really?
Who wants that from a candy? Yes.
Man, see,
I've never had that.
Is that
I've
the
eaten
one?
So many of them.
In the TV commercial where the rabbit is laying the egg?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. See, that already put me off as a kid. I was like, this is so weird that the rabbit's like, and it's like giving birth to like an egg. Because wasn't the inside supposed to seem like an egg? Like it had like a yolk color?
Yeah, it has a yolk. It still does. It wasn't past tense supposed to. It is still supposed to.
Intended to and does.
And does look like an egg.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm for it in the sense that it's one of the few foods that when you eat it, it like gets you literally high from like just the sheer concentration of like liquid sugar inside of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, it's just jam packed and it's like the right size and sort of makeup that you don't really want to take a half a bite. So you'd put the whole thing in your mouth and just like,
like sushi.
Yeah. It's like sushi. It's like this. I'd say it's the sushi of, of Easter candy.
Yeah, thank you for putting it in terms I can understand.
Right. Yeah, for you, Miles, I would say
it's like sushi or one of your boneless wings, and I don't eat boneless.
But yeah, so you get a chemical burn on the way down. I've not had that.
Yeah, before. I guess I thought everybody did, and we were just pretending it didn't happen because everyone liked the Cadbury egg. But I guess it's just me, so I don't like them for that reason. I'll still eat them, but I don't enjoy it.
Now, do you get your Cadbury eggs from, like, a licensed, like, CVS, or where are you getting your chemical
burn?
You'll
find one on the ground once in a while.
Hey, why is he on trial right now? Get some where he gets
them. Yeah. All right. I'm sure you've convinced some people. And let's get into format, guys. We're trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now, today, at the moment that we record. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guests, what is a myth? What's something that people believe to be true that is not actually true based on your experience? Josh, and I'm very excited for this one because I feel like you have come across all the myths in your time as the host of Stuff You Should Know.
We've been known, Chuck and I, to have busted a myth or two here or there. The one that I came up with for today is the myth that ignoring people in public is rude. Like pretending you don't even see somebody in public, right?
Oh, I like and this. Think about, go on.
Okay, so you know, especially when people who maybe live outside of cities come into cities, one of the things they always remark is, oh my gosh, everybody's so rude, they just don't even make eye contact. And there's this guy, this social scientist back in the 60s named Irving Goffman, and he studied this phenomenon, and he concluded that actually what was going on was this really intricate dance that people who live in cities have kind of developed as a part of just being a productive member of society, where you act like the other person's not there. And what you're really doing is affording a certain measure of privacy for yourself and for them in places where their privacy is extremely scarce, which is why people who don't live in cities come to the city and don't get this because they have tons of privacy. So they like to interact in public. People who live in like a city where you're living on top of other people, you don't have as much privacy, so you pretend that the other person's not there. It's called civil inattention. It's actually pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. There's also a practical aspect to it, too, right? Because you can't, if you acknowledged everybody in the city, you would not be able to get anywhere.
How do you do?
It's like, how are you, sir? How are you, sir?
To you, yes,
good day
How's
to you.
The family?
Salutations.
In New York, you quickly learn that you have to look where you're going, like about 6 feet in front of you at the ground where you're going, yeah. and people yeah. just sort of intuit based on that where you're headed, and like that's how you move through the city of New York. You can't, if you like try to look at people in the face, you're just gonna get into all sorts of awkward things, and it's gonna take you forever to like walk down a city block.
I guess it's true because right. like when I've gone to like traveled to smaller towns or areas that aren't as like sort of just sprawling cities, like when I went to Eugene, Oregon the first time visiting my friend who went to U of O, shout out to Chris, I was at a convenience store and I was wearing a Lakers hat and someone was like, hey, so the Lakers, huh? Like they're a pretty good team. And I was so suspicious of this person because in LA, you don't fucking talk to anybody. It's like, let me just get my shit. I'm going to go. And I thought he was trying to scam me because I was like, okay, what's the ask here? I was like, yeah, man, they're a good team. And he's like, yeah, they're doing pretty well. I was like, uh-huh. And he's like, all right, well, have a good day. And I was like, you too. And I walked out feeling like such an asshole because I had, I guess it's weird too. I wonder if there is some like a phenomenon too about the defenses that we have just being in cities too that are just different, that like, you know, when you respond to friendliness of strangers in a different way. Cause I definitely had that. Or maybe that's my social inattention coming into.
No, I think you're right. You know, like when you have to be on guard in the city, even when you are actively ignoring other people, I think part of what Irving Goffman found was like, we're still ignoring one another, but we also have like a decent portion of our awareness and attention peripherally on everybody else,
right.
because there is a chance that somebody's going to like draw a knife and come at you, you know? So
yeah, absolutely.
I think living in the city, it has both of those things, ignoring people while also being extremely threatened and frightened of other people.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I have cruel and unusual world syndrome, right?
Yes.
Where like you watch the news so much and like, that's reality. But actually I loved it though. It made me realize how being wired like that in the city, actually it doesn't vibe well with me. I like to be able to be like, oh, everyone's friendly.
Yeah, and now Miles approaches everybody on the street, and it's really becoming a problem.
Especially in Hollywood.
Hey, man.
I'm getting scammed a lot.
Welcome to Hollywood. Yeah,
yeah. You should dress up as like Batman or something, Miles. You'll meet a lot of people there that way.
All right, let's get into format, guys. We wanted to start off. Miles, I've been gone for a week.
Yeah.
And
Daddy was gone.
Come back, and the first story you want to talk about is that you think Donald Trump is actually making America great again.
I've had a change of heart while you were gone.
Okay.
Wow. Had some real interesting guests that didn't actually make it onto air, just some side conversations with people I met in Hollywood. And it turns out Donald Trump is making America great because I'm just, I guess, you know, this is not an original take, but just the groundswell of activism and demonstrations that have been going on from the students in Florida to the West Virginia teachers, you're starting to see that people are really taking their power very seriously. And I just wanted to bring it up in the context of the West Virginia teacher strike. So we talked about it last week, how they were, I think just a week ago today when Sarah June was on, she brought it up, how the teachers in West Virginia went on strike because they're asking for a 5% pay increase. And they were, you know, the governor and the state legislature were playing hardball, and so they had to go on strike. Last week, the governor and the teachers union made an agreement. They made a deal that said, okay, we'll agree to this 5%. Now we just need the state house and state senate to vote on it. The state house passed a 5% increase. The state senate, however, only passed a 4% increase. So the teachers are like, nah, fuck that. We're going back on strike because we asked for 5%. Now, one of the reasons why is that the states, like the head of the state senate, was basically saying that, you know, we can agreeing to 5% increase didn't take into account like what the state is actually bringing in. They're saying, well, we don't really have that money, and they should actually, you know, they're actually making a bad example to students because they're getting 80% of their demands, so they need to show what compromise is without really acknowledging that these teachers have been compromising for years.
Right.
So now the strike continues, and hopefully it will end soon. But a lot of people, especially in West Virginia, are like, rather than giving huge tax breaks to the energy sector, mostly coal, you know, you can roll some of that back and actually put money back into our pockets, because this is sort of the methodology that these state houses use, is they give tax cuts away, and this applies to all governments. They'll give tax cuts away or tax breaks to people, and then they make up for the money by taking stuff out of like public sector good or teachers or the education system. So this is just kind of interesting to see, because the teachers are seeing how the state is prioritizing sort of corporate profit over the own well-being of the children in their state, And they're taking action. And what's crazy now is that this is starting to spread. So in Oklahoma, they seem to be planning another a strike as well for the teachers there, because they haven't had, a pay rise in like 10 years. And that state legislature, too, they're giving, you know, some breaks away to some of the oil producers in
that state.
People
who are causing earthquakes in their
state. So they are, you know, it's just interesting to see that now we have teachers, too, who are really taking it by the reins and, like, looking out for themselves. And not only themselves, but for the students, because at the end of the day, you want teachers who are happy doing their job. And a lot of – becoming a teacher isn't easy. You know, like, you have – you take on student debt, too, to be a fully, you know, accredited teacher. And being paid nothing, it wears on you, and you want to be able to focus on your students and be able to, you know, enrich their lives. So right. It's a great thing to see now of all these people just kind of taking the power back.
Yeah, and when we were having the tax debate, there were conversations about how a lot of teachers end up spending money out of their own pocket for school supplies because funding has been so drastically cut in recent years because public education has sort of fallen out of favor favor of private education.
And now the new thing is like, well, guess what? Alongside being underpaid and being, you know, crushed under healthcare costs, we want you to learn how to shoot a gun.
That's right.
Like, whoa, come on now. Don't just pile on the responsibilities like that. So also another thing too is we'll add a link, because the thing about these two states, especially in Oklahoma and West Virginia, those states specifically prohibit public sector workers from going on strike at all. Mm-hmm. So there's no strike pay. These people are just depleting their own funds to take a stand for what's right. And, you know, I think this is a cause that's worth helping. We'll attach a link to our footnotes today so you can find out how you can contribute to the strike fund. West Virginia, I don't know if there's one for Oklahoma yet. But, yeah, these teachers, they're losing money even trying to get fair pay. So, yes, we should help them out.
Yeah. My education began in West Virginia public schools, actually, Wheeling, West Virginia, through second grade.
And what was that like then?
It was great, as far as I know. I wasn't, like, the most discerning critic, being that I was seven and had never been to another school before.
Yeah.
And hooked on paregoric.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Not to mention.
Paregoric. Yeah. You're like, yeah, Miss Connors, are you satisfied with your wages? No? Okay. I'll go back to learning how to read.
I did a lot of surveys.
Yeah.
Just a couple things that occurred to me during that. One, Josh, have you guys talked about the man-made earthquakes in Oklahoma on Stuff You Should Know?
Is it from fracking?
Yeah.
We've talked about them from, like, building reservoirs and stuff, and I'm sure we talked about it in the fracking episode, but yeah, I'm familiar.
That's so crazy, man. It's like, yeah.
If you think about it, like, the Earth is kind of pretty densely compact, the mantle is, and if you start messing with it, of course it's gonna punch back. It's the Earth. It's what it does.
Yeah.
It takes no crap.
There's a great that's true about the Earth.
we're starting to see that.
There's a great 60 Minutes where they just covered all of the earthquakes, and they show a graph in the segment, and it's just, it was like zero earthquakes to like 500 earthquakes in the previous year. You know, zero earthquakes like back in the 80s before they started fracking.
Because there's no fault
line,
right?
But energy companies find a way to, you know, be like, well, we disagree with this analysis.
Well, we think too many illegal immigrants live on that side of town.
Right.
And they're throwing the balance off, and that's what's causing the earthquakes.
Another thing companies are really good at that your kind of description of the West Virginia situation reminded me of. Companies are great at pretending they don't have money. That's something you learn in the entertainment industry that I wasn't aware of, like, you know, before I became an adult. And I know we have a lot of listeners who aren't yet adults. Like, companies are great at, you know, projecting earnings and, like, you know, having really rosy projections for how much money they're going to make. But then when it comes time to pay you, when it comes time to, like, decide how much they owe the people who work for them, they suddenly have, like, these really ingenious ways of accounting that make it seem like, we're out of money. I don't know what we can do.
Right.
Here, have this exposure instead.
Exactly.
We'll pay you an exposure.
Right. That's, see, this is good for your career as a teacher.
Yeah. Have you thought about exposure pay?
you got that CNN interview?
Yeah.
One of the things that's always bothered me about companies like pleading poverty is the idea of corporate welfare being championed by the same people who hate individual welfare,
right,
and refuse to recognize that they are the exact same thing, right, at least in principle. If not, one seems a lot better than the other, depending on your stance.
So but what?
That's always bugged me.
Explain what is corporate welfare?
Oh, well, corporate welfare, it's like if you give massive tax breaks to, I think you were saying, like, a lot of the Oklahoma State House gives tax breaks to energy companies.
Right.
Like, one of the industries in your state, they might get huge sweetheart deals and tax breaks and just all these packages that they can be given to save money. The state governments do it to keep companies in their states. The federal government does it to promote, you know, whatever in the economy. But it amounts to what's called corporate welfare, and it's basically the same thing. It's saying, let's throw this whole idea of competition out the window, and here, just take this big chunk of taxpayer-funded money because you're in our state and we like you. It's welfare. It's the same thing as saying, hey, you're down on your luck and you're a human being and an American. Right. Here, take this tiny, meager bit of money and buy some groceries with it. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's funded by the taxpayers, and they don't, they don't have a say in that. A really sort of public example of this is that Amazon did a really brilliant thing and, like, sort of Willy Wonka-ized the competition for where they're going to put HQ2, their second headquarters. Yeah. And the brilliant thing about this is the media is covering it as, like, who's going to get the golden ticket? Who's going to be lucky enough to have Amazon's headquarters
to
nearby?
Suck the corporate teat.
Right. But the way that these cities are competing for them is being like, you won't pay taxes.
Right.
Basically, if you come here, you won't pay taxes. Like we will give you everything. And yeah, it's not going to be good for the citizens necessarily, and probably not very good for them at all.
Good for Amazon though.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting, in Georgia, we had a reverse of that recently, where Delta came out and said, you know what, you guys didn't know we did this unless you were a member of the NRA, but we used to give discounts to NRA members, and we're not going to do that anymore. There's not going to be NRA discounts. And the Georgia Senate voted to take a tax break away from Delta.
Yeah.
To punish them, basically, for speaking out or having whatever corporate policy they wanted to have.
Yeah.
Which is, it was very surprising that they messed with Delta. There are very few people who were happy that they did that, just because Delta provides a lot of jobs in Georgia and Atlanta in particular. So to kind of mess with them like that was possibly ill-advised.
Well, there's also even conversation of, like, if this actually may have violated Delta's First Amendment rights in a very, like, legally roundabout way, because technically they, you know, corporations were deemed to have free speech and can contribute to campaigns and things like that, or elections and things like that. It's weird. And also, when you think about it, Delta released, like, figures. They said only 13 people use that discount.
Right.
Whereas, like, so I'm sorry, like, all that for 13 people?
Right.
Whereas
they took away, like, probably a multi-million dollar tax.
Yeah. And we talked about that, which is like, I think it added up to about 50 million for Delta, but they already made 150 million off the tax scam in December. So I think they'll be
tax
okay.
Scam.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Like, think about the state of affairs where we're like, oh, Delta, you know, like, I'm in favor of you getting your tax break, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's just like the bedfellows keep switching like every 30 seconds here in America these days. It's beyond strange.
Yeah. It's hard to keep up with. That's why you need to listen to a show like The Daily Zeitgeist.
Boom.
I agree. There are some promising signs of, you know, resistance and people sort of being shaken awake from their slumber by the Trump presidency. I'm still just worried about what happens if America is attacked, or if there's it's been a pretty ordinary, handful of years. Obviously, there's been tragedies, but if there's an attack, or, you know,
a significant event, as Donald Trump calls it.
A significant event, which he seems to keep teasing and, kind of hoping for, or like a false flag like Putin used to seize a bunch of power, the modern KGB bombed a bunch of buildings and then used that as an excuse for Putin to like take away citizens' rights.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
that's
very,
not like InfoWars like level news. It really
no,
happened?
That's yeah. That's I mean, there's
that's
a lot
Jack's
of
other podcast.
there's a lot of journalism that suggests that it was the basically yeah. their equivalent Man. Of like the KGB that did the bombings and then they blamed it on terrorism. But that's just my concern. Like it just every chance he gets, he seems to suggest that he wants to be. Like president for life,
yeah.
like he just he openly admires strongmen dictators, and that's all very worrying. I'm just, you know, it's great, it's all fun and good when people are protesting and getting out there, but if something happens and we can't get out there,
look what happened to this guy. You have another kid, you come by, and you're worried about everything now.
That's right.
I'm thinking
yeah,
it's gonna be fine.
Jack, by the way. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I never congratulated you on air, Jack.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
No, you, nor off air. It's really, yeah. really rude, Miles.
Well, I was like, oh, so you're back.
Oh, look who's back.
Oh,
look
cool.
who decided to come crawling back.
I'm glad I was able to stir Miles. Things up between you two.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, but you should stay out of this, Jack. It's getting messy.
All right. We're going to take our first break, and we'll be right back afterwards. And we're back, and it's time to talk about trade wars.
Trade wars. Trade wars.
So, Miles, explain this trade war to me. What's going on?
Oh,
what is
wow.
President Trump threatening?
Yeah. So, gosh, look, I'm in no means a financial advisor or economics expert, but this is what essentially is going down. Last week, Trump basically said. He would be enacting tariffs of 25% on imported steel and 10% on aluminum. And that sent the stock market just like plummet. It just went crazy because they're like, whoa, 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 what is this? Because I guess he unilaterally decided that he's going to impose these tariffs. So for people who don't know, a tariff is just a tax, right? So he's basically saying to, I think, to protect domestic producers of steel and aluminum, you tax the imported version. So by, you know, by price comparison, the local stuff is cheaper, so then you're going to use that, and that'll help America win. But
that's a form of corporate welfare.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yes.
And what's really interesting is that the rationalization or the way they came to this decision, because right now we're in the midst of renegotiating, like, NAFTA, and it seems like suddenly we're going to tax steel, which we import a lot of steel from Mexico and Canada, actually, so that's weird. But he's really aiming it at China as well. But he's
right. China supposedly uses Mexico and like the NAFTA deal as a loophole to basically trade us steel through
China,
Mexico.
Yeah, those dump it in Mexico, and
right.
then that's
and because
how it
of the good rates due to NAFTA, they're able to
right.
Yeah,
and so they're using this sort of weird, very weird loophole. Of using the argument for national security as to why they can just sort of go and unilaterally change these agreements, like for this like overly protectionist sort of stance we're taking. And as if like, you know, this isn't really a significant national security issue because like no one at the State Department, a Department of Defense or the Treasury, none of them are like believe this is true because they all say like, yeah, the domestic capacity is we're good. Like there's no need for this, but they're using it as a way to sort of circumvent just properly negotiating. And the problem is that it's basically going to kick off, so you're going to put taxes on our shit? Well, then now we're going to tax your shit.
Right.
So you've heard from other countries that like, okay, well then what if we begin heavily taxing things that the U.S. exports, like whiskey or motorcycles or
those leather
denims.
Eight ball jackets.
Yeah, exactly. and like when you think about it, those would hit districts that are pretty significant to the GOP, like Harley Davidson's or Paul Ryan. That's right in his neck of the woods. Kentucky is a huge producer of whiskey.
Bourbon.
Yeah. So, and I have Nancy Pelosi with Levi's, I think, is headquartered up there in the Bay. So there are a lot of people who are kind of like, yo, what are you doing? Because clearly many people have tried to reason with the president saying like, it's not just as easy as just saying, hey, we're hitting them with these tariffs and everything's all good. It's like, this is all very interconnected. Like Gary Cohn was trying to say, This can affect our construction and other manufacturers because it's just not the way to do it. And it's going to put in jeopardy your stock market streak that you're going on. And then apparently there's this article in Axios where Trump kept accusing him of being a globalist.
Right.
So it's gotten very weird, because what you're starting to see too is like with Rob Porter and Hope Hicks, like a lot of these people actually, they looked after him to make sure he was doing the right thing and also keep kind of crazy people away from him, like particularly Peter Navarro, who is the director of the Trade Industrial Policy and the director of the White House National Trade Council. And he's like a Bannonite type guy. Like, he comes from that camp. He also wrote a book called Death by China, Confronting the Dragon. And he's like the kind of person that people like Kelly and Rob Porter, like, they did not want to have near the president, because he would just start saying his crazy fucking conspiratorial weird shit and get in his head. And there was apparently like a huge argument in the Oval Office about this.
Right. Where Kelly is still there, but he appears to be losing hope because he's speculating that God is punishing him with this job.
Right.
So it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so it was a bunch of finger pointing of like, you guys are globalist cucks, and the other guys are like, you don't understand how like interconnected the like global markets are, and you can't just unilaterally do this, because on one hand, it weakens our positions when we want to enter into agreements, because there's no way that we can follow through with what we're saying if the president just tweets something the next day and throws everything out of whack.
Right. So the first thought you have in economy is like, well, people aren't buying enough of our goods from us internally, so we're going to tax the other guy's goods. It's like the very first thought you have. And then you talk to people who are experts and they're like, well, but that actually hurts you and only helps like very specifically the people who like own those factories, because yeah, like you said, there's so much interconnection. You know, people who run these companies, like car companies, are importing cheaper steel or aluminum from other countries, and so that's going to hurt like car manufacturers and the people who work in those factories, which are way more than the people who work in steel. So it has very specific benefits. I don't know. This is not the first time I've been reminded of the Vonnegut quote, "The big trouble with dumb bastards is they're too dumb to believe there is such a thing as being smart," with Trump, because I feel like he gets the first idea and thinks he's the first person to have it. And it's like, no, that's like the first of 20 ideas people have and then discard and go to a better idea. And the last thing I'd say is just that, you know, the argument that there is a national security risk, I would just say, you know, most people think a big part of this huge unprecedented period of peace that we've been living through for the past, you know, 50 years in terms of no major countries fighting one another, like not having world wars, not having wars that kill, you know, millions and millions of people. A lot of people think it's because of international trade, and because, you know, why would we invade China when we can get stuff from them that they do better than us and give them stuff that we do better than them. So it doesn't benefit anybody anymore to go to war. But trying to go back to this sort of isolationist, nationalist stance is actually probably in the long run much worse for national security.
Yeah. So have you guys ever heard of the McDonald's or the Golden Arches theory of global peace, I think it's called?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I'm just reading a bunch of Pinker over my paternity week, but explain what that is.
So it's basically, and it's been discredited now, but it held up for a really long time, I think, until some of the Yugoslavian countries went at it back in the 90s in the Balkans. But there was this period where no country that had a McDonald's had ever gone to war, open war, with another country that had a McDonald's in it. And the basic idea behind this was that if you had a McDonald's, you had a thriving free trade democracy, a capitalist democracy, or at the very least you had some form of capitalism. And the idea was that capitalist societies wanted to make money off of other capitalist societies, not go to war with them. So it kind of underscored what you were saying about the idea that free trade and globalism could conceivably promote peace, at least in a lot of people's minds. Certainly it doesn't sound like in Peter Navarro's mind, though.
Right.
No, not at all.
So, well, and I wonder about him. I'm sorry, one more thing. I wonder about him if he kind of represents that whole guard that got Trump elected in the first place, which is kind of like just tear the whole place down and start over again. If you are an anti-globalist and you're, you know, you have the ear of the president, You might not care if there will be what you would consider short-term harm that would come from a trade war, especially if it disentrenched America from this kind of global economy that it's a major part of now.
Yeah, and that's why I was saying that I'm reading a lot of Pinker. Like, he just released a book, Enlightenment Now, which is his follow-up to the Better Angels of Our Nature book that I was talking about a couple weeks ago. And, you know, his whole stance is that, like, when you look at statistics, you know, the world is becoming vastly more peaceful because of, you know, democracy spreading and international trade and, you know, what you were just talking about, Josh. And because of this narrative that has been taking hold in many places around the world that things are getting worse because of the news we consume, because of, you know, the things that we say to each other on social media, people think things are getting worse. And there is this idea that, nah, fuck it, tear it all down. Things have gotten so bad. And it's like, no, progress. Yeah. Progress is working. It's, you know, and it's not, nothing is perfect. And I don't want to say, you know, we're where we need to be, but, you know, things, when you look at most problems and compare them to where those problems were 100 years ago, things are just vastly better, and even better when you compare it to 200 years ago. So
yeah, the frustration reminds me of like when you're a kid and you're building a really elaborate Lego thing,
right?
And you misplace one piece like 10 pieces later and you're like, fuck it! And you smash the whole thing rather than just going back. It's only 10 pieces ago. You don't got to smash the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
You can address that. And what's apparently like in this meeting that I was talking about in this Axios article, Trump just kept like shaming people by calling them globalists throughout the thing. Like to Rob Porter, he was like, wow, I didn't realize you were such a globalist. And what's interesting is that like, you know, Porter and I think John Kelly and Gary Cohn, they were just kind of like resigned to the fact that like, wow, he's just in like this weird mood, because the way the adults in the room, they thought they were going to have like a sequence of tariffs that would slowly guide the president to the right decision. So they're like, first we put tariffs on solar panels and washing machines, like
right,
to compete with China. And then like on hundreds of Chinese products that were like stealing American intellectual property, which was like something that was imminent. And then maybe do the steel and aluminum if at that point Trump really thought that he still needs to slam them on this trade stuff. But I guess at this point, like, he's fully committed, because he kept also mentioning, he's like, my base needs this. My base needs this. And I think when you look at last week, what was going on with Hope Hicks leaving, which was a very close aide to him, and all the terrible press about Jared and Ivanka, like, I think this just sort of like triggered him going like, oh, here's red meat for my base, without thinking what this actually means.
Right.
It was similar, like, even with the gun stuff last week, when he was like, take the guns and then due process.
Right.
Like, he's just, you know, like, we don't know.
It's the last thing that he heard. And,
right.
Right. I mean, maybe the markets are responding positively today because people are now realizing, oh, he just says shit. But
right.
I can't believe we're still realizing that after a year.
Right.
Like, it's like people just can't believe that, but it's the case, you know.
Right,
like,
yeah.
He just says stuff, and then he either forgets it or backs off of it, or maybe doubles down for a little while. But ultimately, what he says, 5% of it must translate into official policy agenda.
Right.
Right.
That's it. 95% of it is just like throwaway comments, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess he doesn't realize what effects that can have. Simply tweeting, like, threatening a tariff, like, oh, I sent the stock market plummeting. Whoa. Yeah.
I don't know if he doesn't realize it. I think he probably gets a bit of a kick out of it, to tell you the truth.
Right. Well, I mean, he's...
Oh, you know, absolutely.
But it's his one achievement, so you'd think he'd hold on to that.
Well, yeah, there's this New York Times profile of him, like, that kind of did a survey of his first year and said that he gets antsy anytime he doesn't see his name in the headlines for like a couple days.
Yeah, I
like,
saw that as well.
He needs this.
Because Hope Hicks and Jared and Ivanka were getting all the shine last week.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time thinking about sort of that progress thing I was talking about versus Trumpism, because I wanted to see how this Pinker book was going to deal with Trumpism, and I don't think he does it sufficiently. But Gia Tolentino, who's a New Yorker writer, really good New Yorker writer. People should Google her and read everything she's written. But she actually summed it up really well and kind of dovetails with what you were saying, Miles, about the Legos. She said, what hurts so badly right now, I think, is this sense of unexpected retrenchment, the fear that decades of incremental progress will be rapidly eradicated by an empty-headed demagogue who appears to be doing everything on a whim. And that, I think, sums up how I feel about, you know, the idea of progress as it relates to where we're at with this guy at the moment.
Well, look, let history also teach you a lesson here, too. Trade wars don't really end well for anybody, right? Like, we tried that with Canada after the Civil War. We, like, ended a reciprocal trade agreement with Canada. And to avoid tariffs, like, 65 American manufacturers just moved their operations to Canada to avoid the tariffs.
Right.
And, like, or even, like, the Smoot-Hawley Act in 1930, like, basically was putting tariffs on pretty much anything that was imported. And that was disastrous. And it, a lot of people say that they agree that that probably made the Great Depression a lot worse than it could have been. But, you know, history really isn't important. So forget it. Never mind. I'm just going to go to the – yeah.
Who has anything to learn from history? Suckers.
Right.
I was going to say that Lego analogy that was so perfect, Miles. The thing is sometimes you want to go smash the Legos. But normally there's an adult there that points out that's not really a good idea. Yeah. Here's a better way. It feels like we're missing the adults now.
Right.
Yeah.
There's nobody saying, wait, let's not do this. Or there's not enough people, or the people who are saying this are not actually in power. But there's no adults to keep us from smashing the Legos or to keep that urge. Because it is a pretty understandable urge, that nihilism, when things are just this messed up and this polarized and there doesn't seem to be any hope whatsoever for any kind of resolution to it. Of course you want to smash the Legos. But to have somebody wiser or even with just a different perspective to say, I know you want to smash the Legos, but don't do it because you're going to hate yourself later. Here, let's just try this instead. This is a better solution. That voice is very much missing right now from our world, from America, at least it feels like.
Yeah.
And I think with Cohn also threatening to leave over this whole tariff thing, that would be the last of the adults, or at least the seemingly adult people in that administration.
Is Kelly not an adult?
I don't know. He's willing to compromise his dignity and beliefs at every turn, so it's hard to know.
He seems exhausted.
Yeah, he really seems like, man, I don't...
When you're speculating that God is punishing you, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, this is a deep cut, but like, do you remember Janine Garofalo's character in The Cable Guy when she worked at Medieval Times?
No.
Well, anyway, there's a part where she's like, he asked for silverware. She's like, there was no silverware in Medieval Times, hence there's no silverware at Medieval Times. And Matthew Broderick's like, there's no silverware, but they had Pepsi. And she just looks at him and goes, look, I got a lot of tables, man. And that's kind of how John Kelly's at now. It's like, look, I got a lot of tables, man. Like, just leave
just
me alone.
Fucking leave me alone.
And I'll just one last thing to add.
And also, he's a horrible racist.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They're even in the UK, right? They're trying to tell Trump this is a bad idea. Like, the UK cabinet office minister, who is it? David Lidington. He was even like, yeah, you know, we tried that protectionist stuff with our car manufacturers in the 60s and 70s, and that actually didn't work.
Right.
He's like, it protected inefficiencies, and we lost all our export markets because our competitors, who were more competitive, went out and gobbled those up from us. So everyone's trying to tell him, like, no, this isn't the way to do it. But I guess we'll just smash the Legos.
Right. It was not Lidington, Mr. Trump. That's an awesome last name. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about some Academy Awards, guys.
Ooh.
And we're back. And we are all still riding the high of last night's Academy Awards. I think I can speak for everyone. No, it was kind of a blah Academy Awards. There were no huge mistakes made, which I guess is what made the previous years so watchable. You would have thought that people, because last year's was so, you know, zeitgeist defining, that more people would have watched this year because they didn't want to miss anything. But ratings are apparently way down and potentially the worst ever, potentially because they had the same host as last year and people, like, apparently that has some effect.
Even the same bits.
Right.
Like, hey, let's go surprise unsuspecting tourists with celebrities.
Let's show how connected we are to the normal people by firing a hot dog cannon at their face.
Although like, when Gal Gadot
take
said,
it, hold still. Filthy animals.
When Gal Gadot was like, oh, it smells like, when Kimmel's like, smells like a lot of weed in here. And she yeah. was like, yeah, I know. I thought she was going to be like, and I'm the police, so you better be honest.
Right. Well, we are thrilled to be joined also by super producer Anna Hosnier, who was keeping an eye on Twitter during the...
Thank you so much. I was live tweeting.
Mm.
Oh, you were?
Throughout this whole thing.
Mm. And do you have any Liddington live tweets that you want to share?
Yeah.
What was the most Liddington?
Well, there were a few. Josh Frulinger at JFRA when Phantom Thread won an Oscar for costume design, which, come on, a bit much. Someone tweeted, wait.
It's beautifully designed costume here.
Yeah, but come on. Come on. Okay.
Okay. It was a bad costume.
At JFRA tweeted, wait, Daniel Day-Lewis didn't design the dresses for that movie? What the fuck kind of method actor is he? Which, that really got me.
But
like I
said,
like,
he
whoa.
Did actually make one of the dresses in there.
Well,
did he?
Yeah.
And that was interesting enough because Sam Neill, you know, our favorite Sam Neill actor extraordinaire of Jurassic Park fame and mm-hmm. everything else he's done.
Yeah.
He tweeted a week ago at Daniel Day-Lewis, posted a photo of himself wearing a three-piece suit and described how he basically, like made that entire suit and then tweeted, eat your heart out, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Wow.
Which was just like, why are you clapping yeah. at him? It was just very funny.
They've always been one and two in my mind of the great method actors of their generation.
Here's another one. At Ali Ward tweeted, I bet Meryl's calendar for tonight just said work thing. Mike Drucker, who... comedy writer tweeted, excited to judge celebrities for every nervous mistake on stage while eating soup with my hands alone in a darkened room, which I thought was pretty spot on how we all just sit around and live tweet every little thing but we're just sitting alone like
God, a utensil is soup eating is really the peak sadness for somebody.
Miles, you summarized the awards well, I thought, this morning when you were saying that it's not really an entertainment as much as it's an opportunity to see how Hollywood would like to view itself.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even tune in for the show itself anymore because I don't care. The only thing I care about is, like, where is Hollywood at right now? Like,
right.
Who are they giving awards to? How much more socially conscious have they become? Not very much, it seems
right.
like.
Because
I'm only there to be like, look, I don't care about the shit in between. I just want to know, like, are they – clearly there were some good moments in there. Like, some of the performances were great. But really the stuff to me that I really hang on to is, like, who are the awards actually given to?
Right.
Because nominating is one thing. But when you know that the Academy itself is then voting like that – so when Jordan Peele won for Best Screenplay, I was like, okay, cool. This something might be happening. But I think what? This was the – for a celebration of women in film, there wasn't much awarding to them, right?
Right. Yeah, they the award show was very pro-women, and they had, you know, accusers of Harvey Weinstein come out and speak out, and that was great. But in terms of the awards, it was the fewest awards given to women since 2012. So
on that note, one Teen Vogue writer, Gabe Bergato, tweeted a photo of Billy Eichner running on the street on his Billy on the Street, and the photo says, for $1, name a woman.
And then some of the winners were a little problematic, too. You know, like Gary Oldman got his Oscar, but that's a man who is dealing with his own allegations of abuse.
Yeah, I fast-forwarded through
and,
that.
And with also one of the most boring acceptance speeches I think I've ever fucking heard. And also, you know, Kobe Bryant won an Academy Award, and I guess people just forgot about the shit that went down in Colorado, 15 years ago, where this woman accused him of raping her, and there was a lot of evidence that was very troubling, but they settled out of court, and clearly, like, we have moved on from that.
Well,
right.
I have a tweet about Kobe as well. Roger Sherman tweeted, move over, EGOT. Kobe Bryant is the first person to ever pull off a LMFAO, which is the Larry O'Brien Trophy, MVP, Finals MVP, All-Star Game MVP, and Oscar.
Mm. Yeah, not too bad.
What did he win an Oscar for?
His short film, Dear Basketball.
So, do you remember when he announced he was retiring and mm-hmm. he wrote a poem about I'd say an A-minus, you know, high school creative writing assignment level poem where he addressed the game he loves and talked about like how he loves it and how, you know, challenging it was to leave it behind. And somebody, you know, had made the smart business decision to adapt that into a short film, an animated short film. And it had a big budget and, it ended up winning for best animated short. So Kobe got up and accepted an Oscar last night.
And the Oscar was given to him by BB-8.
Right.
Absurd.
That whole thing was real awkward. I don't know. And then, I mean, the big winner was, The Shape of Water and,
best part was, Guillermo checked the car to make sure it said Shape of Water on it before he, like, actually grabbed the Oscar. Last year, you can't trust Warren Beatty anymore.
And I don't know if Trump was happy because Mexican directors are dominating the Oscars. Like, between him and Iñárritu, like, they're winning, like, every other fucking year.
Yeah.
So shout out to Mexico.
Iñárritu. Right.
Sending us at their best.
I liked Warren Beatty's whole, like, over wink, wink, nod, nod thing, you know?
Right.
That when he came out to present, was it for Best Picture again?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 It was a little much.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it? Because we fucked it up last year. Do you guys get it?
Do over.
But, I mean, I think what we're talking about with the award show being all about women, but then only six women being awarded, was perfectly addressed by Frances McDormand's speech when she accepted the Academy Award for Best Actress and got up and basically said, every woman who is nominated, stand up. They did. And, she was like, okay, now look around at these women. Now we want you to actually give us jobs and help us. We all have ideas for stories. But like, don't come up to us and congratulate us at the party tonight and be like, oh yeah, we're big fans. We'd love to work
with
you.
Pencil something in.
Yeah. Pencil something in. Like, have us in meetings at your office. Like, actually, you know, follow through, put the money on the table, which is, yeah, I think what we were saying up top.
And the call to the industry at large of putting in inclusion writers in your contracts.
Inclusion writers,
which would basically contractually obligate a production to hire minorities or women in whatever way possible. I mean, I don't know what the specifics would be, but essentially saying that, like, stars wouldn't agree to do a film unless the production itself is dedicated to inclusion.
It was very inside baseball. My mom turned to me and goes, what's an inclusion writer?
Right.
I was just like, I don't know.
Even in a room full of like LA Hollywood people yesterday, people took a second and they're like, what? Inclusion writer? And then they're like, oh, a writer to a contract.
Is that at her badass biker gang?
The inclusion writers.
Fuck yeah. And Anna, is there... is there another story about The Shape of Water that you'd like to share?
That you really
with us?
Want to talk about?
Thank
you are desperate to talk
for
about?
Bringing that up. So, this company that makes dildos decided, because we all love that sexy, sexy creature from Shape of Water. I mean, what a tall glass of seawater. Seawater.
Tall glass of seawater.
Can you just do the Kim Samantha from Sex and the City?
She's amazing the whole time.
Here's my Samantha from Sex and the City. He's got the funkiest tasting spunk.
So
we meant just read the whole, do the piece
you
like
want
that.
Me to do all
the,
okay.
No. So wait, they're making dildo. Wait, so a dildo company? What now?
So this dildo company, Xenocat Artifacts, they sell and make like exotic, interesting dildos. They designed a dildo for the sea creature from Shape of Water. And it, look, I'm not going to lie, it is spot on. Not that I know, I mean, well, yeah, what do
no
I know?
No one saw it. Wait, so what spot on to what?
But I mean, just how it looks, we'll post the photo
how
in the footnotes.
How you expect that it would look.
Yeah, I was amazed. I was like, yeah, no, I could totally see that. It's
colored like his body.
Yes. And, you know. And it's got, well, you'll have to go look.
Right.
I won't describe it to detail, but you know. It's sold out immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to come out with a whole new shipment. I believe it came out on January 15th, sold out in like a few hours. They dropped another one on March 3rd. I believe it's already sold out because I went online to get it. I mean, it's not any of your business. But
How is this not a cottage industry already where they just make dildos for different movie characters?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, even if they're human characters, if it was like, yo, this is Tom Hardy from Dunkirk's junk. Yeah. Like,
or this is the like, Fred Flintstone.
Right. Oh,
here's the Daniel Plainview from right. There Will Be Blood.
Right.
Oh.
I think those would do well.
But what was the development process like? So they're just like, well, this is what we think a sea creature's penis would look like, and boom.
Well, this company is known for designing, like custom silicone dildos. Uh-huh.
That are like, they have some like yeah. whale dildos and
yeah,
like,
they have
whale
like,
dicks.
But
I think
it's
called
all,
a dork.
My bad.
They're all very well done. So I think they had a designer come in and, you know, just really look at photos of him. And I think just sculpt what they really thought it would look like. And it, like I said, it's spot on. It looks like it could have, you know, how, if you've seen the movie, mm-hmm. the hand motions of yeah. how they described it coming
the
out.
The penis coming
emerging.
Out.
Yeah, yeah. It like opens up and pops out.
I mean, ooh, based on this, we can say here. That he is not a fish man because fish are broadcast inseminators,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
just shoot it out there and it lands on eggs somehow.
To see where it lands, yeah.
Right. So
see what sticks to the wall.
Right. Exactly. So this proves that the fish man is actually more of a like whale dolphin human, clearly.
So we got to the bottom of that case.
So right. yeah, the actor Doug Jones, who plays the fish, not very many people know that, he was, I don't know, he said he wasn't exactly thrilled because he said, after pouring my heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears into this romantic, beautiful, magical role, the last thing I want to be remembered for is a silicon appendage that comes in two sizes, which is right. like understandable, but.
Yeah, but don't also take yourself too seriously, my right. man. You didn't have any speaking lines.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think he was just. You know, being I think he was kind of caught off guard. He's
yeah.
actually a great. I think he's played monsters before, and he's yeah. pretty good.
And it's an honor, right, that someone went that far to speculate
true.
What
women
the
were
your
out,
character's penis would look like.
Thirsting
then,
for this, it was
yeah.
selling out.
Yeah,
yeah.
And every time they would take people's like constructive criticism and perfect it.
Yeah, that's you were saying that there's like a feedback process with
yeah.
this dildo maker.
Also,
yeah.
V2 was different than the launch version.
Yeah,
wow.
They like perfected, I guess, the like circumference of the well,
girth.
Yeah,
if you
the girth. We're really getting deep into this. But Guillermo del Toro came out and said that it wasn't accurate.
Oh,
so
what an asshole!
He's like, nah, man.
I don't know what he thought.
Right.
Nice try.
That's
nice
not
try,
what
loser.
I had in mind.
Right.
Well, then come out with yours, then Guillermo. Like, don't fuck around. Like, let the people know if we're fucking up the origin story of the member of this character. Then let us know, or else we're gonna have to wildly speculate.
Right. Well, Anna, thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
Josh, it has been a pleasure having you. Where can people find you?
At my house.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Cool.
Still living in
Bangor,
Maine?
No, I won't squander this opportunity. They can find me on Stuff You Should Know on iTunes at StuffYouShouldKnow.com. Every Tuesday and Thursday, we release a new episode, and thank you for setting me up for that. And also, I didn't get to say this at the beginning, but thank you very much for having me on today, and let's do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's a thrill. Like I said to you before, off mic, you guys were the first podcast I ever listened to, and I've been a big fan for a long time. So this has been
great.
A thrill for me as well.
Well, I'm blown away by you guys as well. Like I thought you were seriously. Like crazy to try this, you know, on a daily basis. And now that I've done it, you are absolutely crazy to do this on a daily basis. So I'm deeply impressed with you guys.
Oh, thanks, Josh.
See, did you hear that, listeners?
Yeah.
Josh just showed us some love.
Yeah. Show us the proper respect.
Yes.
No.
Put some respect on our name.
Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can find me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. We also have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
Where we link off to the sources for the information that you heard in today's episode. That is going to do it for this Monday episode of the Daily Zeitgeist. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.